Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcasts. My name is Luis Costa da Silva, and on today's episode, we have a Pride Month special as we're talking about the importance of LGBTQ plus staff networks in the NHS. It's a real pleasure for me to present this podcast as chair of our Proud Provider staff group, which offers support, solidarity, and allyship for our LGBTQ staff members here at NHS Providers. The NHS is always and will always be a healthcare service for all, with an open and welcoming approach for patients and its workforce. Staff networks are a huge part of building a sense of belonging and support, and it's never been more important to ensure an inclusive environment for people to work in each and every day. To kickstart today's episode, I spoke to Peter Molyneux, Chair of Sussex Partnership NHS Foundation Trust, about the role leaders have in this area. Peter also spoke about the obstacles, challenges, and areas of progress he has seen over the years.
I think that some of the leaders who are across the NHS now bring the experience of having sort of started in organizations at a time when censorship and silencing was commonplace. And I think, I include myself in that, I think we developed masks and personas in order to try and navigate different workplaces. And I think that's been quite a challenge for us, because I think that we realize that as things have changed, we have needed to change as well. And of course, at one level, there's something about recognizing what it is people need to see from you. And I think that very much relates to how we create more inclusion and more belonging in workplaces, because I think we need to show more curiosity about each other. And also, I think we need to recognize that things change and that we need to learn and we need to show humility and develop an understanding of what people expect. And although some of that's down to knowledge and some of that's down to curiosity, it's also, I think, down to compassion as well. So I think if you bring honesty and compassion and curiosity together, then I think you start to create something that is genuinely more inclusive and where people can bring their unique contribution.
Thank you, Peter. Some really important points there, and leading by example, definitely something that has been highlighted before as well. What about some of the obstacles that you may have found in those conversations you had? Was there anything you'd like to bring today?
I think that one of the things that strikes you, if you've ever worked anywhere other than the NHS, and then you come into the NHS, is it is a very particular environment. And I think that it takes quite a lot of time to work out what's going on. Because if you like, there's obviously most of us are trying to apply interventions for which there is an evidence base. And so there's something about making sure we're doing everything properly. We sometimes miss out the importance of some of the relational aspects of that, I think, in terms of the effectiveness of what people are trying to achieve in whatever situation or whatever circumstance they find themselves. And I think that, you know, being authentic, but also being curious is really part of building trust. And whether that's between colleagues or whether that's between a clinician or a care provider and a patient or a carer, there's got to be some curiosity in order to create the trust that is going to make the whole situation more effective. And it still seems to me that that is an obstacle. And I know that people will say, well, they're very busy, they're under pressure, but actually it still seems to me that that's a barrier. But it does feel a little bit at the moment that there's a barrier in terms of thinking about how we make use of diversity. And sometimes by really encouraging people to bring those different perspectives, you can end up having some quite robust conversations. Now, I passionately believe that's worthwhile, because hopefully you'll then make some better quality decisions. But it's not always straightforward. And I think the thing we can't ignore is that society itself is increasingly polarized. I think that the lack of curiosity is being weaponized. And we need to acknowledge that there are very different experiences depending on which bit of the LGBTQ plus communities we're talking about. And clearly trans and non-binary colleagues are experiencing a huge amount of abuse, hostility, and discrimination. both as patients and in our workplaces. And there's a real leadership challenge for us to try and make sure that the NHS is a safer place for them.
Thank you, Peter. Definitely important to highlight the recent struggles of trans and non-binary people that have been happening, particularly in the United Kingdom. So how much has the situation changed in recent years, would you say?
Sometimes people say, why are we focusing more on race than we are on LGBTQ+? You know, we've got Brighton and Hove in our patch that has a very high proportion of people who are LGBTQ+, and clearly they're an important part of our population. Many of them are our staff and many of them are our patients. But it seems to me that we still aren't really using the data properly, because if we start to look at who is not advancing within organizations sufficiently, who is not actually experiencing equity of outcome, the data will show us that that is still going to be more likely to be people from BAME backgrounds. And of course, if they are from BA or ME backgrounds and LGBTQ+, then they're likely to also be experiencing worse outcomes. So I think a lot has changed in terms of the focus, but I still think there's a challenge in making sure we're looking at the granular data. So I think it's very easy for someone like me, who is a white, middle-class, cisgender gay man, to recognize the huge changes I've seen and from which I benefit. But it's really important that I'm bringing towards me, and my colleagues are bringing towards us, the data that shows us actually where are the variations and where are the unacceptable variations.
Thank you, Peter. Hugely important to apply that intersectionality angle in the work that we do. And something we also keep in mind here in our own network. I have one last question for you. In this podcast, we are talking to LGBTQ+ staff networks. How important is their role in contributing to a tolerant and inclusive culture in a trust, but also providing support and solidarity for LGBTQ+ colleagues?
Staff networks are hugely important. And I think that they are very good at helping you reach out across the whole of your workforce in a perhaps a slightly different way. And they're very good, I think, as a way of helping you to capture the whispers on the wind in terms of what's going on within your organization. I think they're really important because I think there's some real advantage to having a place where you can come together, but they've got to be connected to the decision-making parts of the organization. They've got to be part of the decision-making of the organization. And we've got to create the space for communication across different networks, because otherwise the risk is that you just create silos and that's really unhelpful. Although most of us want those networks to create their own agendas, so there is something about connecting their activity to the overall goal of the organization, because I think they're a very good place for us to develop our individual agency. And I think they're a very good way of helping us to create an NHS that is more reflective of society as a whole, but also where people can be their authentic selves with pride and without fear.
That was Peter Molyneux. Northeast London Foundation Trust's EDI lead, Rima Huzer, spoke to me about the changes she has seen within her trust, her community, and wider society.
So my role at NELFT is to oversee the implementation of the network strategy. It's a 5-year piece of work, and we have objectives, for example, like things like changing policies to make them more inclusive of the community, reviewing our HR processes, changing our language to make it up to date and gender neutral. We've got a trans and non-binary staff policy. We've got a trans and non-binary service user policy in development. And we've got all year education and awareness for staff. And to really achieve these and to make them truly impactful, we need to be in everyone's faces all the time. So we're shouting about the changes that we're making, and we are really visible in terms of our plans for projects. You know, we're in loads and loads of spaces. So, for example, we have a trust newsletter. The staff network's always in there. An equality, diversity and inclusion newsletter. We tend to have a regular space in there. We've got speaker slots at the weekly all-staff webinar to talk about our work. We've got 3 prides this year, and we're also sending out lots of all-staff emails. So people are generally hearing from us all the time, whether it's our posters, our logos. And I think we've really in the last 3 years raised our profile of the network. We also have a separate allies network where allies have to register officially, undergo training, and this helps us get our messaging and the changes that we need to see and information about our projects across North East London Foundation Trust. And also our executive sponsor of our network is the CEO of the organization. So that really helps us get into the spaces that we need to be in. I wanted to say we did join the Stonewall Workplace Equality Index a few years ago. And last year we made it into Stonewall's top 100, which was just amazing, actually. It took a lot of work, but we were able to achieve this through things like continuous awareness and education and really showing our inclusivity of additionally marginalized groups.
Thank you. Sounds like some amazing initiatives are taking place in your trust at the moment, and it's really inspiring to see that and your work with allies as well. Are there any significant successes you'd like to highlight out of the things that you've been doing with the network?
Yeah, definitely. For me, as a queer person of colour and as someone who is an ally to the trans community, it's been absolutely incredible to see more trans people and bi people and people of colour either joining the network or really showing an interest in our work. And that's something that we didn't really have before, but now it's really, really changing. And that to me is a huge achievement. Somebody said to me a few weeks ago that finding your community, wherever you are, whether it's your neighborhood or whether it's in your workplace, is the biggest act of self-care. And it really struck me, and I thought, yeah, we really need to kind of push this safe space. And it's been growing in numbers and growing in diversity too, which is brilliant to see. So for me, that feels like a success. We've had a couple of things this year that I think really signal change to me. So we've got a collaboration with Transactual UK, where we are running monthly training sessions. People book their entire teams on training, and we did specify a minimum number. So we're getting lots of people recognizing that actually they need to get this right. They need to do better. For me, it feels like when we first started talking about trans inclusivity, it felt like a relatively new topic and interest was a lot lower. But I think what we're witnessing right now, it's a culture change. So I think we're moving in the right direction.
Well, definitely. The work with the trans community is so needed at the moment, and it's great to see that those initiatives are taking place. I was going to ask you now about any things that have got in the way of progress or any issues that you may have found in your work with the network.
It's nice, actually, to be able to talk about what is getting in the way of this work. I'll start with saying that, in general, people aren't grasping that LGBTQ+ people still have issues with their equal human rights, I think, just as a topic. For example, I mentioned Pride earlier. Pride is still a protest for many groups. It's not a party, and there is still a lot of work to be done. Things like homophobia and transphobia are legacies of colonial times. So a lot of slow and careful work needs to be done to unpick some ideas.
Thank you, Rima. One last quick question for me. We've heard a lot of examples of work and activities that your staff network is doing, and we've heard from other chairs as well about what they're doing in the NHS. How much do you feel that this is being reflected in wider society, really?
Well, let's be really honest. I want to see queer spaces become celebratory spaces, not survivor spaces or well-being spaces. When it comes to reflecting our efforts, I think, yeah, it's happening, but progress is so slow. But at the same time, you know, I think it's important to note that there are some really great organisations out there doing incredible work. And these organisations are doing monumental work to raise awareness of some of the struggles of queer people. And when you raise awareness on a huge scale, you do have an impact in so many spaces. So it's becoming easier to be ourselves out there. And I'm just so happy to be a part of those changes. It's a constant battle, and it's a lot of campaigns, it's a lot of awareness, but I think it is working.
Great stuff. Next, we'll be hearing from Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust as they share what the main impact of having a staff network for their LGBTQ+ community has been, as well as what they hope to achieve moving forward. Ashley Lodge and Nick Coldrick are co-chairs of the network at Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. Ashley is also the Trust's head of well-being. I asked them what they see as the key role of an LGBTQ plus staff network.
So for me, it's about promoting the Trust as an open and inclusive employer, allowing staff to raise concerns that they feel are important and gives them a voice to raise those issues with the senior leadership across the organisation. It's about supporting the Trust leadership in issues where the network may have specific knowledge or understanding, and also showing that there is a place for everyone within the organisation, regardless of your sexual orientation, and about showing that there is a broad spectrum of people across the organisation in the network, and that your sexual orientation shouldn't hold you back or be seen as a barrier to your success in your career.
And for me, I think what's important is also that social wellbeing element. Our LGBT plus group is one of 5 staff networks we have at OUH. And I think it is that sense of community. There is a social aspect too. I'm very keen on making sure that we give all of our staff members, both LGBT plus and allies, a place where we can come together. So we sometimes meet for coffee in the Trust, but also we go out and we have social evenings too. And we've also made some good links with some of the other local Trusts. So for me, it's also that social well-being bit, which is really important with a staff network like ours.
Thank you. That definitely resonates with our own network here at NHS Providers. What sort of things have you been doing to make a difference?
We've been doing quite a bit recently. With the lifting of COVID restrictions, we've been able to do a lot more. We got approval to fly the Progress Pride flag from our John Radcliffe Hospital site and our Horton Hospital site in Banbury. So we fly those for the whole of Pride Month. We were back at Oxford Pride just last weekend. It marked the 20th anniversary of Pride in Oxford. And as one of the city's and county's largest employers, it was really good to have a significant presence there. The weather was fantastic. Lots of people coming past. And it was a real showcase of what a great open organisation we have.
For me, what I really enjoyed about it was meeting members of the community. So patients were coming up and talking to us. And I talked to someone whose partner had been treated at the hospital. He was just saying about how he was just so pleased about the open and inclusive treatment. No one ever looked differently because the partner was male. And it was really nice to actually talk about their experiences. But also, you know, talking to people about potentially coming to work for us as an open and inclusive employer. So that was really important. And I think that's what I love about the fact that, like Nick was saying, post-COVID, we can now actually go out and meet people in person. And so Pride was one of our key events. And I think our other event that we try to always do something around is LGBT plus History Month in February. So we organised a screening of the film Milk, the biopic of Harvey Milk. Again, that social element. So I think there is that both that sense of about inclusion, both for employers and our patients, and also a sense of where we've come in terms of progressing as a society around all things around LGBT plus inclusion. So I think that History Month is really important to focus on how far things have come and progressed.
We've also done lanyards, which it's really nice to see around the organisation. And for those that are unable to wear a lanyard, if they're in a particular clinical role, for example, we've had badges made. We've recently joined in January as well the Stonewall Diversity Champions programme, and we're looking to progress that. And particularly with the publication of the EDI agenda, the role of the network is really going to increase, I think, over the next 12 to 18 months.
Definitely. And we work very closely with our EDI manager on all the monitoring aspects and all of the reporting aspects, and a part of the EDI steering committee that we have, sharing where there might be any issues or points for discussion. So, you know, it's great that we've got all those mechanisms in place.
Thank you. Some great initiatives there, and definitely inspiring for us to hear. So in terms of concerns, for example, how do you make sure that those concerns that are raised through the network are acted on?
So we have in our organization a named executive lead for each of the 5 networks. We have regular contact with them. They come to some of our events. We have excellent support from our EDI manager. And we have a regular EDI forum where concerns are raised from each of the 5 networks. And we're also particularly lucky that we have a strong direct link to our Chief People Officer, Terry Roberts, who supports us and has an open door policy.
It's really great to hear those things. We know at times of pressure, as we've seen in the NHS, the friendship, solidarity and support of colleagues is really important. What are your ambitions in the future to develop the role of the network to help colleagues through these difficult times?
Good question. I'm looking forward to seeing how the Trust takes forward the EDI improvement plan and how the network can support with that. I think this is about post-COVID. We move forward with face-to-face events, catch-ups, the social aspects, listening, and it's all part of the kind of well-being agenda, I think. But I think it's about those softer skills, perhaps, and just listening and being there and being available.
For me, it is about growing the network, but also making sure that we can allow people time to come along to those events. I think that's the key thing. It's always a tricky one because that we all know working in the NHS, the demands of the role, and it's about being very pragmatic. But also, if we get enough people into the network, then we can expand some of the committee roles and therefore, you know, more hands make lighter work. And I think a big example of, you know, working with the Stonewall Diversity Champions and starting looking at the Workplace Equality Index is going to be one that's going to need a whole team of people to be looking at it. But it's very much down to kind of people having that time and availability.
Thank you, Ashley. And what kind of support and recognition do you get from the Trust in support of these aims that you've mentioned?
I think we get exceptional support and recognition from the Trust, to be honest. We have the trust and confidence of our CPO, which allows us to progress network issues.
And we can have an open and honest conversation with them. They can come and talk to us and ask us, you know, what's going on here? What's the right acronyms to use and things like that? And I think that allows us, therefore, to be able to have an identity that people can understand for us as a group and as allies too. So I think those are an example of kind of the topics and ongoing discussions and debates we have.
Ashley Lodge and Nick Coldrick from Oxford University Hospital. Our next guest comes from the Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust. I spoke with lead nurse and network chair, Paul Carruthers, about how he managed to transform the network and what the impact has been.
Well, there has been some really successful chairs in the past, and I think the issue was about time and resource. But when I came on board, the main thing I wanted to put out there was visibility. I think visibility is key for queer people and especially people within our trust. So although the network was doing great, I don't think it was as visible as what it could have been. So the main thing that I did was work with our comms team and make sure that we were actively engaged with comms. So we had regular shared things from the media, for example, or we did Q&As with the staff network, and I made sure that I was quite visible. So our senior exec team are predominantly made up of cis hetero people. So I think, you know, it was key that we made sure that there were some queer identities within our trust. And I think that helped then gain momentum. So we had a core group of around, I don't know, less than half a dozen when I first joined. And we've now got over 30 people, a WhatsApp group with over 60 people. And we've still got a long way to go because Leeds Teaching Hospitals has over 20,000 staff. But we've come a long, long way. And that's been recognised in award nominations. And we've successfully won some awards as well. But I guess more importantly, I've seen the effects of that. I've seen staff getting the support that they require. I'm like a proud dad as the chair. I've seen friendships develop. So I think if I was to give any advice to any of the staff networks, I think visibility is key.
Thank you, Paul. That is really helpful. And I'll keep my fingers crossed for that award. It's really amazing.
Thank you.
You've already mentioned a few things, but in more broad terms, what impact has that had on the Trust in terms of its culture and policies?
I think we've come a long way in having our Trust understanding queer culture. You know, we're fortunate, aren't we, that there's a lot out there in the mainstream, but really understanding the nuances of queer culture and what that feels like, whether it's for people coming to work who don't feel they can be their true authentic selves. So we're really lucky in Leeds Teaching Hospitals to have exec sponsors attached to all our staff networks, which I think is super helpful. So our Chief Operating Officer, Claire Smith, has made sure that the staff network has pushed through different policies and procedures to affect staff. So we have seen a change in culture, but I'm not going to sit here and say it's fantastic. There's a long way to go, and that would be recognised across the world, but we've definitely come a long way. We've managed to work quite closely with our equality, diversity and inclusion team to make sure that lived experiences are at the forefront when they're developing education, when it targets queer people or looking after queer people.
That's really, really good to hear. Thank you for sharing that. How important is intersectionality, reaching out and working with other staff networks, for example?
I think it's really important. I think I understand my privilege of being white and cis as a gay man, but I work with a lot of colleagues and friends who fit into different identities and bring their own culture. And I think it's important to recognize, and I've learned this from educating myself and speaking to my non-white friends and my less able-bodied colleagues, that sometimes it can be difficult to find somewhere where you belong. And I know I worked with a Black gay man who said that in the Black community, he was experiencing homophobia. And then in the gay community, he was experiencing racism. So I think it's really difficult for some people to find somewhere that they belong. And we know from research that that increases mental health difficulties. So we've worked quite closely with other networks. I'm fortunate that we've got people in our network that have multitude of identities and come and represent those. So we've got people that attend the Disability Network, the BME Network, some that actually are part of all the networks. So we make sure that we've got representatives that are feeding back, and that's the same with all the networks. So yeah, it's super important. I think it's something that it's in its infancy and getting people to understand how important it is. And I think, you know, in the gay community, I know only too well that, you know, discrimination can still exist. So I think it's really important that we work across all the spectrums and make sure that we get representation.
Thank you, Paul. I agree that it is really important to have that intersectionality angle in the work that we do in our networks, and something that we also keep in mind here at NHS Providers. My last question for you, Paul, is what would you say are the main challenges ahead?
I think the main challenges for the queer community is that we need to recognise that we exist in a hetero and cis normative world, whether that's in society or within our institutions and certainly within the NHS. But, you know, statistically, most people are heterosexual and cisgendered, so we recognise that. But I think for those people that are, and to call yourself a true ally, is you need to come on board and understand what that's like for some people living and existing in a heteronormative world. And we see that in our policies and procedures throughout the NHS and throughout the world. So I think it's really important to rely on staff networks with their lived experiences to help change that. So that's definitely a challenge. We're fortunate in our trust that our exec team want to improve the culture. But we still recognise that there are people who come to work, and it's really sad in 2023 that can't be their true authentic selves. And we see that more in the BME community. And we know from recent research in the British Medical Journal that there's a large percentage of certainly Asian gay men who are not able to be out or their authentic selves at work. And, you know, that's sad for me to think of those people and the effect that that must have on their mental health. So I think that's probably a big challenge that I think people need to really focus on, is shifting heteronormativity and cis normativity.
Paul Carruthers from Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust, there on the key contribution of LGBTQ plus staff networks within the NHS. That wraps up this Pride Month special of the Provider Podcast. We hope you found it informative, inspiring, and insightful. A reminder, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter, on LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast. And keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast as well. Thank you, and happy Pride.